Last week, I pointed out that we're going to be spending a lot of time looking at three verses in Parshat Mishpatim in Exodus 22 and 23, two of them about strangers and one of them about widows and orphans. The first one is, you shall not wrong or oppress a stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. The second verse about strangers, at the bottom of the slide here, you shall not oppress a stranger, for you know the feelings of the stranger, having yourself been strangers in the land of Egypt. And in between, we have a little section here about widows and orphans. This section goes on with a threat that the Torah makes on people if they do not observe this mitzvah, if they actually ill-treat widows or orphans.
Rabbi, the sound is not good.
If you'd like, I will try the headphones. We'll see if that makes it any better.
Thank you.
Last week, I talked about Jerry Unterman's book, How the Jewish Bible Revolutionized Ethics. And Jerry's basic claim in this book, which I totally agree with, is that the book demonstrates by substantial evidence derived from various sources, Sumerian, Egyptian, Babylonian, Hittite, Ugaritic, Assyrian, and of course, biblical, that the Jewish Bible not only changed the course of ethical thought, but advanced it far beyond ancient Near Eastern society and religion in key areas. And the major key area in which Rabbi Dr. Unterman points out that there is a great advance of the Bible over the values in the world around it is in the attitude to the disadvantaged people in society, to the poor in society, to the widows, to the orphans, and to the strangers. You don't find texts like this that we just talked about. You don't find texts like this in ancient Near Eastern societies. And to the extent that that we in the West have learned this lesson of trying to watch out for the disadvantaged in society, we have learned this lesson from the Bible. Anybody who wants to know more about this book, of course, you can buy the book. But if you don't want to do that, you can also read the review that I wrote about it. Here's the link to the review. So we talked mostly about widows and orphans last week because I was off on a tirade. I hope you all forgive me for being on a tirade last week, complaining about a new translation of the Bible that I thought totally distorted what it said about widows and orphans. For those of you who weren't here last week, you can go listen to the tirade if you want to hear a tirade. But now we're going back to the stranger. And the theme of the stranger appears very often in the Bible, the ger. These are the two verses. We saw them before. I'll read them this time in Hebrew. Ger lo toneh v'lo tilchatzenu ki gerim heyitem v'eretz Mitzrayim. And the ger lo tilchat v'atem yedatem et nefesh ha-ger ki gerim heyitem v'eretz Mitzrayim. So the question is whether there are two arguments being presented in these two verses here about why you should be nice to the ger. We'll talk about that as we go on. Or is this just two ways of phrasing the same idea? But before we get to that, we have to define our terms, because as we all know, that ger in later Hebrew means a convert to Judaism, and no less of authority than Rashi tells us that you just can't say that these verses mean to have a positive attitude, to refrain from oppressing converts. Of course, we should also refrain from oppressing converts, that there is a mitzvah to be nice to converts and to refrain from doing oppressive things to a convert. But that's not what this verse is talking about. And Rashi, who very often follows in, as you all know, follows in rabbinic tradition and isn't always committed to the pshat of the text. He writes here in his commentary on Exodus 22, Kol lashon ger adam shelo nolad ba medina ela ba me'eretz acheret lagur po. Whenever the word ger occurs in the Bible, it means a person who wasn't born in this country, but came from another country to live here. Now, of course, the reason why you have to say this is because you can't translate like 22:20. You can't say this means you shall not wrong or oppress a convert, for you were converts in the land of Egypt. That's not what the text is saying. It's obviously saying that you were strangers. You were non-citizens, you were second-class people in the land of Egypt. And for that reason, when you have people with some kind of lower status living in the country where you are now, you have to be nice to them. Just because we are reading Parshat Ki Teitzei here, I thought that we would also read Rashi's commentary on this idea in this week's Parsha. Rashi writes, this is what I've always felt that this is a really surprising comment of Rashi, but a comment that I find personally very meaningful. So the verse in this week's Parsha says, do not despise an Edomite, for the Edomites are related to you. Do not despise an Egyptian, because you resided as foreigners in their country. I'm not sure why JPS preferred foreigners here instead of strangers. Kiger hayita be'artso, but it's the same phrase as in as here. Kigerim hayitem be'eretz Mitzrayim. Do not despise an Egyptian because you were strangers in their country. And Rashi writes here, lo tata'ev Mitzri mikol v'chol. Afal pishes zarku zechorechem la yeor matam shayulachem achsanya bishaat hadchak. I meant to fix my English translation of this before the class and I forgot to. There's a minor mistake here in the English translation. Do not despise an Egyptian at all, even though they threw your male children, shouldn't say firstborn, even though they threw your male children into the Nile, which would seem to be a very good reason to despise the Egyptians, because they killed many Jews, Rashi says. And why not? Matam, shayu lachem achsanya bishaat hadchak, since they provided you with a safe haven at a difficult time, meaning in the days of the famine, in the days of Joseph, where there was nothing to eat in the land of Canaan, and the Israelites were able to go down to Egypt and were able to survive there in Egypt. Why do I think that this comment of Rashi is so interesting, and why do I think that it is so surprising? Because when we these days think about the experience that our ancestors had in various countries of the diaspora, we often think to ourselves of the terrible things that happened to them in various countries. And we don't think about the fact that, you know, I won't even name countries, but you can name yourself various countries where terrible things happened to Jews at some point in history. But it began with Jews moving there because they were moving to a country that was an achsanya b'sha'at hadchak, a safe haven at a difficult time. The Jews were having difficulty in one country. They moved to a new country and they were accepted there and they were allowed to be there. And very often there is a feeling that what we should be remembering are the terrible destructive things that were done to our people in various diasporic situations. And of course, we should remember that too. But the question is, what should be paramount in our thinking? Should we be thinking, when we think about country X, should we be thinking about the fact that they killed Jews? Or should we be thinking about the fact that they saved Jews? And Rashi is saying here that the reason, the example of the Egyptians is a very strong example, because the Egyptians were not, in the end, were terrible to the children of Israel. But in the beginning, they provided a safe haven. And Rashi is kind of saying that that should be paramount in our mind, as opposed to the kind of approach that we all have heard. And we can find, if you wanted, I could find Jewish sources that say this, that, you know, that anti-Semitism is something that's, if you don't see it there, it's, you just have to scratch a little bit and it's underneath the surface, and you can see that even though there was a period of time when people got along okay with the Jews, it all ended with a terrible tragedy. But Rashi comes up with this, which you don't have to. This comment of Rashi isn't required by the text, but Rashi, the teacher, is trying to teach that when thinking back about Jewish history, we should remember the good things that were done for the Jewish people in various countries, even in various countries where, in the end, the Jews ended up suffering in those countries. A surprising kind of message from Rashi, who, if I had to
give a general comment about Rashi, Rashi is not the biggest pro-Gentile commentator in the Jewish tradition. And so that's why, every year on Parshat Ki Tetzeh, when I see this comment
of Rashi, I say, oh, that's really interesting that Rashi tells us that that's what we should be remembering of the experience in Egypt. You know, we mentioned in the Haggadah, Meshivim Nefesh, Yardu Avotecha, Mitzrayim.
We mentioned Lagur Ba'aretz,
Banukim,
Nireh Latzon Asher La'avatecha. So there's a little bit of a remembrance in the Haggadah of the fact that the original experience of the Israelites in Egypt was a
positive experience, and in fact a beneficial experience for the Israelites, but that certainly is not highlighted in the Haggadah. Okay, so that was the end of Rashi's comment. You can see the three dots here because I left out the beginning of Rashi's comment. And now we get back to the rest of Rashi's comment on this
verse. He says, he explains, what does it mean to say, "Der lo tone the lo tilchatzenu ki gerim heyitem the eretz mitzrayim"? You know, let's think about it for a second. You shall not wrong or oppress the stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt.
What's the logical connection?
That's what we're going to spend a lot of time on right now,
trying to figure out
what the logical connection is between the first part of the verse and the second
part of the verse. Okay. I was once a stranger in the land of Egypt. Try to think of an example. Can you say, be nice to immature people who behave improperly? Because once upon a time, you were an immature
person who behaved improperly. You know, I don't know if we actually feel that every experience that we have had means, since I have had that experience, I remember I once shared with a friend of mine when I was a teenager, I just learned the rabbinic statement that says, a well that you have drunk from, you should not spit into. And I shared this with a friend of mine, and he said to me, why not?
What was the fact that I drank from that? Well, you know, what's the logical
connection? So Rashi
actually finds a surprising logical connection between
the first part of the verse and the second
part of the verse. Rashi writes, also, Rashi makes the assumption that
lo tone in the verse, he thinks that that means to speak improperly towards, to speak insultingly towards. So lo tone
his understanding
means to insult. Ona atzavarim, as he calls it.
And
I was referring to something stronger than that.
Why should I not insult a stranger?
If you insult them, they can insult you by saying to you, you also descend from strangers.
Do not insult someone else for a blemish that you also have. So if you point out to somebody who's, an Olei Chadash in Israel,
you haven't been here for very long, how dare you have an opinion about what's going on in our country? Well, we all are Olim Chadashim. We've all had the experience of moving from one place to another place. And so essentially, Rashi
understands the logic here as people in glass houses should not throw stones. Since we can all be insulted as being immigrants, then we should be nice to all immigrants is the logic. So it ends up, according to Rashi's understanding, not being so much a
moral call to us to ethical action. It's more like an etzah tova, like a good advice. If you end up insulting somebody for the fact that they are a stranger, know that you too are susceptible to this, and so you don't want people insulting you for the fact that you are you come from the stock
of immigrants.
So
that's Rashi's understanding of the connection between the clauses of the verse. Rashbam says it's not so surprising that he does this, that, when I point that out right at the beginning, there are these two different verses about strangers.
And
I said, are they offering the same rationale or a different rationale?
Is for you were strangers in the land of Egypt the same as for you know the feelings of the stranger having yourself been strangers in the land of Egypt?
Rashbam,
who is Mr. Pratt, the one who's interested only in the simplest understanding.
Is interested in trying to find the simplest and clearest and plainest understanding of the text. He says that they mean the same thing as each other. You shouldn't try to distinguish
between these two
rationales.
As it is written below, you shall not oppress a ger, for you know the feelings of the ger, having been gerim yourself in the land of Egypt. And so,
again, though, that raises the question, well, just because I went through
the experience, does that
mean that I have to be nice to
everybody else who's going through the experience? But here, Rashbam
tries to explain what the logic of the text is. He writes, because the ger's pain is greater, the punishment for wronging a ger is also greater. Lafisha tzarato meruba onsho
merube. So what Rashbam is saying is, having been through the experience of being strangers, you know how
fragile you
are and how defenseless in a certain sense you are when you are a stranger, and you know that it was very easy to oppress you when you were a stranger and did not have rights and did not have sovereignty and did not live in a country that offered you a protection, and that made you suffer more. Rashbam is kind of suggesting, I think it makes sense. Somebody might want to argue with this, but I think he's making sense that when you know that you have legal recourse, that you have an easy way of dealing with a problem, that you have a situation where you can turn to the authorities and they're going to be nice to you, then it's easier to deal with the problems. But when you are powerless and defenseless, then you suffer more. And so it's like the logic of the verse is,
you were slaves. In the first
verse here, you were strangers in the land of Egypt.
You know how much strangers suffer when they are mistreated.
More than other people suffer when they are mistreated.
And so, of course,
you shouldn't mistreat
anyone. But
certainly you shouldn't mistreat a stranger, because a stranger's suffering is so much greater than your suffering.
So now we've seen Rashi's attempt to explain the connection between the law and the rationale, and we've seen Rashbam's
attempt to explain the connection. Even Ezra, as you may recall, wrote two commentaries on the Book of Shmot, and he wrote something slightly different in the two commentaries.
In the first commentary, which he wrote in Italy, he
wrote the Ger Lo Tone, U Ger Toshav. He's emphasizing
that we aren't talking about a convert. A ger toshav means a non-Jew who is living
in a place where Israelites have
sovereignty, and he
is not part of the major of the group of the majority.
Could I trouble anybody
who isn't muted to mute themselves? There's some background noise that I don't think is coming from my
end.
So first of all, he defines that we are dealing with we're not dealing with a convert.
We're
dealing with a non-Jew who is living in a Jewish
country.
He
has no family. They have no family to help them. Bechol echad mehaezrachim yachol lohonoto
behono gam bedirato gam mahavio al yedei lachatz al yedei edut. There are many ways in which citizens can deny the rights of the strangers who are living in their country. They can
take advantage of them financially. They can without going into
too many political details, they can take away from them financial benefits that other people in the country
have. They can
discriminate against them in
housing. They can testify against them in courts of law. And when the stranger doesn't know how the legal system works in the country, then they're at a great disadvantage of figuring out how to defend themselves when they are mistreated
in this way. Ibn Ezra is just really explaining what
it is that is
forbidden, but it's not
in this comment. He's not trying to explain the logical connection of the verse
that we were looking at before. In a second commentary on Shmuel that he wrote in France
a little later in his life, the person was written in
Italy. Ibn Ezra writes, "V'ger
kabel
v'ger shalom avod avodah zara lo tonenu ba'aretzecha ba'avur sheyesh lecha koach rav mimenu uzechor ki gerim heyitem kamohu." So this is a
common theme in Ibn Ezra's writing,
is that there are some minimal standards that are required
in the Jewish country. Non-Jews who are living in the country, and one of the minimal standards is
that not to worship Avodah Zarah, not to worship idols for the strangers who want to live in the country. And if they follow these minimal standards, some of you might know that the Mormons, when they built a Mormon center in Israel, were told that they had permission to build it only if they promised that they would not do any proselytizing in the country. And some rabbi that I know told me that in Israel, told me that he got in a conversation with a Mormon not too long ago, and the Mormon said he was asking some questions about Mormon beliefs, and the Mormon said to him,
"I don't want to answer. There's a law
in this country that I'm not allowed to proselytize. I don't want to explain anything about my religion to you because I don't want to be accused of breaking the law
of the
land." And this rabbi told me that, you know, he wasn't really considering converting to Mormonism. He just wanted
an answer. He wanted to understand their faith a little bit better. So there are situations in which there are rules
that are given.
Even Ezra has, maybe we'll see this in a later session, but even Ezra has an interesting idea of what the non-Jew who lives in the country is really obligated to do. But
his explanation of the last clause here, Uzechor ki gerim heyitem kamohu. He just says, remember that you were once strangers like them. And so
I don't think he's really
solved the question of what the logical connection is. Don't mistreat a ger. You were once a ger, but he's just saying that that's
what the Torah is saying. There is this logical connection. Okay. Ramban,
Ramosha ben Nachman, writing in Spain and then later finishing off
his historic commentary after he moved to the land of Israel late in life. Ramban knew very well Rashi's commentary on the Torah.
And Ibn Ezra's commentary on the Torah. Ramban never saw Rashbam's commentary on the Torah, so he won't relate to the rationale that was given by Rashbam,
but
he will relate to the
rationales given by Rashi and by Ibn Ezra. So Rambam begins by saying, essentially the question that I asked in the beginning, lo shuru kol ha-gerim ba'ur heyotenu gerim ba'aretz zman. There's no reason why all strangers
should be considered kosher because of our having been strangers in the land of Egypt. What's the logical connection? Okay, so we were strangers once. Why does that mean that every stranger is now has been elevated in status because of that? The Ein Tam Sheyumuf Tachim La'olam Ba'avur Kain. This is even more threatening,
kind of.
Or that they should feel assured for that reason forever against being wronged or oppressed. But why should some stranger who shows up here assume that just because we were once strangers, that he or she is not going to be wronged
or oppressed? It's kind of a shocking beginning to the comment, but we'll see. You'll see that Ramban comes up with a really, I think, interesting, novel, and perhaps persuasive
way of reading this verse that differs from anything that we have seen until now. But first of all, it begins as...
Yes. Dr. Lakshin, could we try without the headset again?
For sure. I'm more comfortable this way. Let's try it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Now Ramban, as he often does, begins by surveying and dismissing all of the commentaries that have written about the subject before him.
Rabbeinu Shlomo Yehutam, Rashi explained that this phrase tells us why
we shouldn't insult strangers. God
warned against insulting them for, and he quotes Rashi, if you insult them, they can also insult you by saying to you, you also descend from strangers. Do not insult someone for a blemish that you also have. And Ibn Ezra said, remember that you too were strangers. Second. Remember that you too were strangers.
But none of this makes sense. I like his, those of you who study a little bit of Talmud or Shulchan Aruch might like the end of Ramban's comment here. Ein b'chol zeh ta'am ki'ikar. It's a phrase from the Kashrut laws that would be very hard to translate literally here. What he is saying, none of this makes sense. All these attempts to explain what the rationale of the Torah is giving here for refraining from attacking strangers, what it means. But okay, now I'm going to tell you what it seems
to me to be the correct understanding of the text.
Ki omar,
lo tonen hager v'lo tachetzenu, ותחשוב שאינו מציל מידך, כי אתה ידעת שהייתם גרים במצרים, וראית את הלחץ אשר מצרים לוחצים אתכם, ועשיתי בהם נקמה. In my opinion, the correct interpretation is, do not wrong strangers or oppress them, thinking, as you might, that no one can save them from your hand. It's easier to wrong strangers or oppress strangers than to wrong or oppress people who have been in the country for a long time and have connections in the country and know how to defend themselves. So you might think that the easy people to pick on in the country are the strangers. And so
what's the logic here? For you know, and Rashbam talked about this and said that the idea is that because the stranger doesn't have all those connections in the country, the stranger suffers more when, and that's why it's emphasized. Because of course, ona'a and lachatz aren't a good thing to do to any person. So why is there a specific mitzvah about the stranger? So Rashbam's answer is because stranger feels it more than other people, and that's why it has to be emphasized that you shouldn't do it to the stranger. But Ramban goes in a different direction. For you know that you were strangers in the land of Egypt, and I saw the oppression that the Egyptians oppressed you, and I took vengeance on them on your behalf. That the meaning of the verse.
You shouldn't wrong or oppress a stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt, and you know what happened. You know the end of the story, that the strangers ended up being defended by God, and the oppressors ended up getting punished by God. And since you have read the beginning of the book of Shmot, and you know what happens to people who oppress strangers,
you should think twice before you start oppressing strangers, because the same thing could happen to you. And Ramban waxes almost poetic about this. Ki ani ro'eh dimat ha'ashukim asher in lahem
menachem umiyad oshkehem. For I behold the tears of those who are oppressed by the powerful and have no comforter.
And I
deliver them from people who are stronger than they are.
So you should understand God's role.
God is the speaker in this law code. And you should understand God's role in all of this. That if you oppress the weak people in society, well, just remember what happened when you were the weak people in society and you were oppressed, and how God got involved and how God delivered you and he punished the other. Likewise, you shall not afflict the widow and the orphan, for I will hear their cry, for all these people do not rely upon themselves, but they trust in me. And that's why there is the juxtaposition there of the laws of about not you should refrain from mistreating the stranger, and then it goes on to the widows and the orphans, because those are the people who do not have easy redress within society. And a Jew should remember, according to Ramban, what happens when people take advantage of the weak people in society.
If you deny the rights to the weaker people in society, if you oppress them, if you harm them in any way, it's a fascinating understanding of the structure
of the book of Exodus,
because the book of Exodus began by telling the story of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, of the mistreatment
of the Israelites in Egypt. Very often, and
nothing this is wrong, this is also right, that, the story is read as the special
story about the special relationship between God and the Jewish people. And for sure, Ramban would agree with that also, with the idea of the special relationship between God and the Jewish people. But he also says that you should learn from this the special relationship between God
and the disadvantaged in society. And the disadvantaged in society are going to be protected by God. And so if
you are on the wrong side here, if you are on the side of oppressing the disadvantaged in society, know what is going to happen to you. I remember many years ago when I was a student of Nechama Leibovitz, she wrote on the
blackboard in Hebrew,
she wrote the verse, you shall not wrong or oppress a stranger, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt.
And she said
to each of us that we should take out a piece of paper and we should put in punctuation into this verse. And
it was a trick question. I should just make it clear that it was a trick question. Everybody was thinking about commas and semicolons and all sorts of things like that. And what punctuation was Nechama looking for in this verse? She was looking for an ellipsis, three dots at the end of the verse. She said, that's how Ramban thinks that you should be reading this verse. You shall not wrong or oppress a stranger, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt.
And you know what happened afterwards. I'll always remember how this little exercise in punctuation was useful for me to remember how Ramban was explaining this verse to us.
And I think I was pretty young back then, and I wasn't quite sure
what an ellipsis did at the end of the verse, and Nechama made that
that clear to us. That's what the ellipsis
does. It means, this is, you should fill in the blanks. Keep reading.
Keep reading the verse. And Ramban might find support, and we'll see what he says about this, for in a verse.
Again, in, I think this is this week's Parsha, chapter 24. Not sure. Anybody remember? Okay. Lo tater mishpat ger yatom, v'lo tachvol beged almana. You shall not subvert the rights of the stranger or the fatherless. You shall not take a widow's garment in pawn. And the continuation here is here, what we're remembering is not just that we were strangers or slaves in Egypt. We're supposed to remember that we were slaves in Egypt and remember that the Lord your God redeemed you from there. And so what's the
logical connection again? So we've got a rule here about the stranger, about the orphan, and about the widow.
And the first clause here in the verse,
you shall not subvert the rights of the stranger or the fatherless.
And then The second part, you shall not take a widow's garment and pawn. At a later session, we'll say more about what that precisely means, not taking a widow's garment and pawn.
That seems to be asking for special treatment for the widow.
It's saying you might be allowed to take somebody else's garment
in pawn,
but you shouldn't take a widow's garment in pawn.
And then the explanation and the continuation, remember that you were slain and remember that God
took you out of there. So Ramban writes there, V'zacharta ki eved hayita, almanat ken pediticha, lishmor chukotai, ba'afilu bedavar sheyesh bo chesron kis, l'shon Rabbeinu Shlomo. So first Ramban begins, as I said before, as he often does, by quoting Rashi, and Rashi says, I gave you this mitzvah, I did something for you, so you owe me something, and you should be willing to give up something monetarily.
Why do you take a,
anybody's garment in
pawn? Because
they owe you some money, and so they don't have money to repay you, so you take their clothing from them, because that's the only thing that you have.
The only chattels that you have that you can take in order to try to reclaim the loan, and the law here is saying we can't do that if you're dealing with a widow.
You're not allowed to do something like this to a widow, and so the Torah is like
asking you to give up something that comes to you financially, some right that comes to you financially, and that's the logical connection here. Because I did something for you in the past, I can ask you to observe my
laws, even if they are going to cause you a monetary loss. That's how Rashi explained it. But Ramban says, no, that's not that second verse here, the verse that explains the reason behind it, is not
explaining the reason about the clause about the
widow, but it's explaining the reason
about the first clause about
subverting the rights of the stranger or of the orphan. And the correct interpretation
is that it refers back to the admonitions concerning the stranger. I have already explained the meaning.
The idea is, remember that you were a slave. Remember that God redeemed you from your slavery.
Remember what happened to the people who oppressed you. And that's why you should not oppress people who have fewer rights than you have, or fewer connections, and or less involved
in the country in which they live.
That's how Ramban explains the text. Another way of understanding the text is offered by Rabbi
Yosef before Shore, writing in northern France at the end of the 12th century. He explains that when the
logical connection here between being nice to the stranger and remembering that you
were a stranger and that God came, you were a slave, and God came to your defense. So the Horshar puts it in terms of many rabbis will, for many mitzvot over the ages, he puts it in terms of imitatio
Dei,
the principle that human beings should be trying to imitate
the God to the extent that we are able
to imitate
God. And he writes, V'zacharta ki eved hayita b'mitzrayim v'yiftecha, shera'a et onyecha v'shibudcha,
v'richem alecha ushtedacha, al ken anochi mitzavcha la'asot et ha'davar hazeh l'rachim aniyim v'lachmol alechem. Remember that God
saw your affliction and enslavement, and he took pity on you, and he redeemed you. And that is the reason that I enjoin
you to observe this commandment, to take pity on
the poor and to have compassion on them. But this idea of God being on the side of the disadvantaged appears
very frequently in later in rabbinic literature. There's this great line from the Talmud, from Masechet Megillah. Rabbi Yochanan said, whenever you find a reference in the Bible to God's might,
you also find adjacent to it
a reference to God's humility. In other words, God is
God, not only because God is great and is able to
do all sorts of things that human beings are
unable to do, but God
is also great because God is involved with the nitty-gritty of life and worrying about
the disadvantaged people in society. And evidence of this is found in the Torah.
In the Nevi'im and in the Ketuvim, and the Torah, it says, So we have this verse describing God's awesome greatness. The Lord your God is the God of gods and the Lord of lords. And it's written immediately afterwards, he executes the judgment of the fatherless and the widow, caring for even the weakest parts of society.
We find this again in the prophets. Ko amar Ram benisa shochein ad bekadosh uchtei batrei ve'et taka ushfal ruach. God is described as the high and lofty one that inhabits eternity, whose name is sacred. And then right after that, it says that God is also with the contrite and the lowly of spirit. And the same idea is also found in the Ketuvim. It's stated a third time in the writings. It is written, rides upon the clouds,
whose name is the Lord. And right after that,
it says, father of the fatherless and judge of the widows. And maybe one last comment here. The explanation that we should remember that we were
slaves in Egypt is applied to many, many mitzvot, particularly in Sefer Devarim. You may have noticed in the Torah reading in recent weeks and in this Shabbat's Torah reading, you'll see this idea of many mitzvot being connected to the fact that we were once slaves in Egypt. But
it's strange that Shavuot
also receives this
rationale in Sefer Dvarim.
You shall observe the Feast of Weeks for the Lord your God,
offering your free will contribution.
You shall rejoice before the Lord your God with your
son, your daughter, your male and female slave,
the Levites in your community, and the stranger, the fatherless, and the widow in your midst, that the place where the Lord your God will choose to establish his name.
Bear in mind that you
were slaves in Egypt, and take care to obey these laws. Some halachists have pointed out that there is no simple connection between Shavuot and Yitziat Mitzrayim.
And it's because of
this verse that we also say Zecher Yitziat Mitzrayim
in Kiddush on Shavuot.
But actually, the events of Shavuot don't have
anything
directly to do with Yitziat Mitzrayim.
So what is the rationale of putting into the text the
Shavuot, the idea that we were once slaves in Egypt? It's explaining why you have to be nice when you're celebrating Shavuot. You know, to think
about your male and female slave,
including them in your celebration, because
you remember
that you were once. So it really doesn't have anything to do with Shavuot. It has to do with the idea that because we come from disadvantaged ancestors, so
we have to be nice to those who are disadvantaged these days.
And the Horshor again puts it into a bit of a theological framework. When you see how joyous you feel, remember the slavery that you experienced in Egypt, and you've had no opportunities to rest and be joyous and thank God who redeemed you from there. So that's another explanation about, of course, about why we remember what our experience was in Egypt. So when we're living in a country where we can celebrate Shavuot and we can have a feast and we can invite people to come and participate in our feasts, it's important to remember the humble roots that we came from, and this will cause you to be grateful to God who allowed us to reach this this place.
So these are all attempts to try to understand the rationale about why the Torah is constantly saying
that we are doing things in order to remember Yetziat Mitzrayim, in order to remember that we were strangers in Egypt, in order to remember that God redeemed us from Egypt. Now, okay.
Taking a look at the chat, did Rashi live through a benign time for Jews in his community? Bina asked. You know, in the beginning of Rashi's life, it was a pretty benign time for Jews in
his community, but in the last 9 years of Rashi's life were the first Crusades, and while there was no actual destruction in northern France where Rashi lived, Rashi had studied in Germany, and
Rashi still had a strong connection with the
Jewish community in Germany.
And the Crusaders
decimated Jewish communities of various communities in Germany, and
Rashi was pretty moved. We know this from his halachic writings. He wrote a lot about Jews who had
converted to Christianity by force and
wanted to come back to Judaism and how to treat them.
The question that scholars
wonder about is whether Rashi changed his commentary on the Torah in the last 9 years of his life. If I had to take a bet on that subject, I would say that he did not. Can you see any signs? We know that Rashi did write and rewrite
different works of his. Can we see any references to the tragedies of the Crusades in Rashi's Torah commentary? I don't think so. Shelley writes, the Egyptians welcomed us in with gratitude for what Joseph did. Other countries like Poland welcomed us in for what we could do for them. Be tax collectors, money lenders, traders. That's, you're absolutely right about that.
Shelley. But still, I still remember many years ago, we brought to York University in Toronto a guest speaker, a professor
who was an expert in 16th and 17th century Polish Jewish history. And he gave a lecture about Polish Jewish history in the 16th and 17th century. And a survivor who was in the audience
got up and said, "It was terrible there. Why are you saying that there were decent things going on in Poland?"
And the speaker tried to explain that he was talking about the 16th and 17th century, and he knew very well that some awful things happened to Jews in Poland in later centuries. But, the question is, what should you be seeing? Should you be looking at
16th and 17th century
through the prism of knowing that it all ended in
terrible tragedies for our people? Yes. Susanna says, we tend to dislike characteristics in others that are faults we also share. Very insightful comment.
Well, that you drank from Don't Spit in It. I thought it was Don't Throw a Stone in It. I think they're both sayings are found, but maybe I'm wrong about that.
Is there a word for empathy in the Torah? I'm not sure that there is. Esther S. Is there a word for empathy in biblical Hebrew? I don't know of one right off.
The translation that I had problems with last week is called The Contemporary Torah 2006. And there are many things about that translation that I do like. As I said last week, I do like the attempt to make a more gender-sensitive translation. I think that they did a lot of that in an intelligent kind of way. Okay. Thank you, whoever has to remove the yoke from my hand. Okay. Maybe Ramban is also thinking of God destroying Sodom for what they did to strangers, and the strangers were not related to Abraham. Very, very good point. You can take a poor person's garment but have to return it at night. Sounds like the law is even stricter with the widow. Shelley, you're absolutely right. What it is saying is that generally a poor person, if it's a rich person and they owe you money and they haven't repaid you, you can take something, you don't have to give it back. If they're a poor person, you take it from them and you have to give it back every day. If it's a widow, it says, just forget about it. You're not taking any clothing from the widow. And we'll say more about that in a future session. God is a universal defender, even if the oppressors are his chosen people. Yes, you said
it much more directly and strongly than I said it, Steve, but I agree with what you wrote there. Okay, nice seeing you all, and we'll continue with this next week. For those of you who can't tell, I'm moving around North America right now.
I'm in Manhattan right
now,
and I will be in Chicago next Wednesday. In the last Wednesday session, I'll be back in my home in Jerusalem. And if I bump into any of the New Yorkers on the street or any of my relatives in Michigan
who might be
coming to New York, I'd be very happy. All the best to all of you.
Bye-bye. Thank you so much. Safe and enjoyable travels, I hope.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for joining. If you were here earlier, you would have heard that I announced some new LO classes starting tomorrow. Rabbi Alex Israel is teaching a class called Tishrei, A Spiritual Guide from the Bible to Ourselves. And Dr. Benny Gesundheit will be teaching about Tshuva and Tanakh, specifically the Torah and Haftorah readings during the High Holidays. So I hope you can join us for that or for Dr. Lushen's session next week. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.